fun.
All right. Welcome back, everybody, to the Quill and Query podcast. My name is Brandon Hall. As always, I'm joined today by my wonderful co-host, Ash. Ash, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. Hot, but well.
I think most of us can relate. I definitely can.
Yep.
Just trying to stay inside as much as possible. But you know it's bad when, like, the dog is asking to go back inside.
Yes, immediately. Just go out, do thing, come back, and they're like, nope.
Yeah. Well, we have a little bit of a shorter episode again this week. We're going to talk about some general writing advice and just our overall thoughts on it. And just kind of in the same vein of our last mini episode, I'd expect it to be about half length. We're still kind of feeling these out, so might be a little bit of a fluctuation there. But before we get into all that, I just want to acknowledge, I'm going to skip ahead of our reading updates real quick and go to the podcast update, because if anyone is joining us on YouTube, this is our first live being hosted on YouTube. We usually host these on TikTok, but we're trying something new, mostly just to have one platform and one screen to look at while we're going live. So hopefully you guys like the lives over there on YouTube. I know you seem to like the clips a fair bit, so you can join us while we're recording and, you know, get the full experience. Okay, Ash, do you want to jump into our reading updates real quick? Because I have a few books that I've been reading that...
Nice!
I've been reading a lot more, like, this past month than I've been all year so far. So, really excited about that. But how about you? How's your reading ventures going before I take over with that?
No, I'm glad that you have and are excited to share. I've been reading a lot more in the last, I think this is day 9. I've got my partner started using this app to limit his screen time. It's called Opal. So I gave it a shot, and I like block off times during the day, like during the workday, where I can't be on my phone.
Yeah.
So I've been reading way more, which has been really nice, trying to stay off that phone. So I finished Sunrise on the Reaping, which is like the second, or it's a prequel to The Hunger Games. That was pretty good. I think I gave it like a 3.5 or 4. And then I'm currently working on an advanced copy of a book that comes out today called Memory Hunters by, I think it's Mia Tsai. It's good so far. It's an interesting concept. It's like kind of this distant dystopian Appalachian sci-fi where human memory can be accessed in bits and pieces by these memory hunters who then take those memories to the Museum of Human Memory, which has become like this massive institution that kind of controls the legacy of humanity before it was like destroyed by this decade-long storm that came through. I'm about a quarter of the way through, and I'm not enjoying it as much as I thought I would, because I think the concept is so fun, and so, you know, it kind of gives me like Hunger Game vibes mixed with like the Drowning Empire series. I don't know if you've heard of that, but
yeah,
I don't know. It seems a little, I don't know, a little basic, a little contrived. I'm not really digging the characters too much. They all seem very, like, immature, but it's not sold as a YA. It's, like, everyone's in their, like, early 20s. So, I don't know. I'm still finishing it up. We'll see what I think at the end. But anyway, that's what I'm currently reading. What about you?
Very cool. Well, so the key to my extra reading has actually been the same thing. It's been cutting down on my screen time.
Yeah, nice. So, awesome.
For the longest time, I told myself I don't need to put like time limits on apps, because I thought I had, you know, enough self-control to not scroll endlessly. But that has proven to not be the case. And so I actually, I recently watched a video from another booktuber who was talking about like strategies to shift, you know, reaching for your phone, like every time you're bored, to reaching for a book. And so that has helped immensely in how much I'm reading, because rather than scroll like Reddit and TikTok and Instagram, for like 30 minutes each, I've set like a hard 10 to 15 minute limit on each of those.
Nice.
And it's annoying to have to go through and like reset it if I really want to. So that's enough of a barrier for me that it actually works.
Cool.
And so in place of that, I have been like you, reading a lot more. Yeah. And so one of the books that I'm still reading The Devils, but one of the books that I've actually finished started and finished since our last episode was The Hobbit, because I've never actually read it. I've only seen the films. Oh,
amazing.
Yeah, so was really excited to finish that one because that's been like a long time TBR. I'll get to it eventually.
Book.
So yeah, that was good. And with that one, I went back and forth between my paperback and the audiobook by Andy Serkis. So that was also a fun experience. Cool.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Andy Serkis, like, that must have been amazing.
Yeah, you know, he does his Gollum voice, yes. Same as you would expect. But he's also really good at, like, I will say, if for some reason you don't like the Lord of the Rings films, don't get the Andy Serkis narration, because he sounds like Ian McClellan and all the other actors, he does a really good impression of all of them. And so it's very much a film lover's.
Yeah.
If you love the adaptation, this is probably the best version for you. But,
that's awesome.
But yeah, definitely really enjoyed that one. And then I started, I guess he's done a narration for all of the Lord of the Rings books as well. So I moved over to Fellowship next.
Cool. I'll have to partake as well, because that's awesome. I love him so much. Very cool.
Yeah. And any excuse to like re-experience Middle Earth, like I said, I've only really done the films for the most part. So
yeah,
you know, this is, I feel like as a fantasy author, I have to actually read the books at some point. It's kind of sacrilege not to.
Do you know if he reads the Silmarillion?
There is a Silmarillion audiobook, but I don't know if there's one from him.
Okay, gotcha. I feel like that would be a really hard audiobook, because it's kind of just like a lineage list history.
Yeah,
that
one would be interesting to experience, for sure.
Very fun.
I don't know how you would do that. But
me neither.
All right, well, that's our reading updates. We don't have any audience questions or indie releases to spotlight at the moment, so I'm going to skip over those. And like I said, the topic for the week is writing advice. So we picked, I think, 7 of like the most popular writing advice out there, and just we're going to go through all of those and talk about what we think about it, whether we apply this to our writing or not, and answer some fun follow-ups with those. So I guess I'll kick us off with the first one.
Sure.
And I started with this one because I think this is the most common advice I see given from like other authors who are successful. And that's, I'll read the quote here, because with each one I have a quote. So this quote comes from Stephen King, but I feel like there's a variation of this quote from many different authors out there. So, not attributing it to like just him. This advice comes from a lot of places, but the quote goes, "If you want to be a writer, you must do 2 things above all others: read a lot and write a lot. There's no way around these 2 things that I'm aware of. No shortcut." So essentially boils down to, if you want to be a writer, you have to read and you have to write, and you have to do both of those things in abundance. I think this is pretty standard advice. I don't have a whole lot to say about it other than I think it's valid, and it's probably the best starting point for if you're like an aspiring writer and you don't know where to start, and you're trying to take in wisdom from these other authors who have been successful. You know, the number one thing I see they all say is practice writing consistently and make sure you're reading consistently too. How do you feel about this advice? Like, I know I'm sure you're probably in the same boat, but do you have any additional thoughts on it?
I mean, I think, yeah, that I agree that there is no way around it. I think sometimes there can be a pressure to like really like, you know, spend all of your time doing both. But I mean, it is, I think we've talked plenty about this on the podcast. It's just like a muscle, right? Like the more you practice or the more you train it or strengthen it, the better or easier it gets. And I was actually talking to my tattoo artist last night while she was working on me, and you know, I was like, yeah, there's you start writing and you just realize there's so much you don't know, and all you can do is just keep going and learn as you go. And she brought up how there are certain authors that she's followed since the beginning of their careers that she's like, their first couple books weren't great, but then like now they're so much better because they've just kept at it, especially if you're kind of a self-taught author or, you know, you didn't formally get any writing training. But I mean, I think that's like a perfect encapsulation of it. It's like, you just have to be brave enough to keep doing it. And You're not going to ask a scientist to kind of create a cure if they haven't, you know, if they don't have the knowledge, at least, or the practice in the lab to get that, you know, yeah, the final product. So it's like, yeah, you can't not continue learning, and it should be like a lifetime long thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I think I otherwise like very much agree. I'm just not sure like to the extent, especially like someone like Stephen King, like he pumps out a bunch of books. I know this is like just a quote from him, but you mm-hmm. know, he like pumps out so many books, and didn't he used to be addicted to like cocaine, which makes things like a lot easier.
Give it a little bit of an edge.
Yeah, I think he had a cocaine addiction. So you're like, okay, I mean, it makes sense for The Shining, right? You're like, this is someone who was drugged up, but no, otherwise good advice, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right that there doesn't need to be like the pressure to have an insane output or like be one of these avid readers who reads like 3-4 books a week. I think I think the point is really just make sure you're exercising those muscles regularly, mm-hmm. like, and learning from other people in the industry, kind of like with any other skill or career path you would take. It's important to study the people who are successful and to practice at it. That doesn't mean you need to burn yourself out or, you know, kill yourself trying to do it like at an insane pace. I think doing it consistently at a sustainable pace is also equally important. So to follow up on that, I guess one of the questions I had is, what do you think about authors? And this admittedly is a rare encounter of mine, so I don't know if you've seen any of it in your book talk or Bookstagram adventures. Mm-hmm. But occasionally I'll come across an author talking about how they don't read that much, or they don't like, there was one post I saw on like a writing Reddit that got a lot of backlash because it was a writer or an aspiring author saying they want to write a book, but they don't like reading books. And that was interesting to me. And it's interesting that it's rare, but it's not so rare that it like, it keeps popping up in my feed every now and then. And it makes me curious. So sometimes I wonder what goes through these people's minds, like how they arrive at the conclusion of wanting to write a book when they don't actually enjoy reading. So have you seen any of that? And how do you feel when someone kind of says that, if you have?
I actually have not stumbled across that. I'm not like heavily on, maybe this is a problem too, probably not, because social media is.
I would say it's a good thing.
Like I'm not really on like Bookstagram pretty heavily. I very rarely post from my writer Instagram now, just because I like forget about it, which is probably, again, it's a good thing. Even some of my favorite authors very rarely post. But regardless of if I've seen it or not, it seems like that's a sentiment that some people have. And I don't know if I agree with that at all. I feel like, what drew you to writing, if not reading, right? To be clear, like, if you're writing an autobiography or something that happened in your life, right, and you're wanting to turn this into that, that's one thing. I think that's valid, you know? Or you're writing, like, something like nonfiction, like a historical whatever. Maybe you can get away with that. But I don't know. For, like, literature and fiction, I just feel like you gain so much knowledge by reading. I don't know if I agree. I think that's kind of silly. It's almost like at that point, you're kind of wanting it for the cash grab. Which is probably not true for everybody, but you know, it's like, oh, writing and reading writing and having a book published is like a popular, like easy way to make money or whatever. And it's like, I don't know. If you're like trying to create stories, but you don't have a lot of, you know, brain dead. I forgot the word. You don't have a lot of experience. In that field, that seems a little strange. It's like someone who's like, I'm gonna run a marathon, and then having never run before. Okay. I mean, technically, people have done it. It's not like it's impossible, but
Generally, you should maybe try running around the block first before you.
Like maybe buy a pair of running shoes first.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's.
Yeah. To me, I always, with that, I always wonder if they're like misinterpreting what they want to, like what they're trying to accomplish. Like, it, I think it's a, they want to create something. They just maybe don't know what avenue is best for that or something. Cause ultimately writing, I think, is the most accessible form of like creativity when it comes to like storytelling. So like film production, for example, is going to be a lot harder to break into. Like you need a lot more to create even like a, you know, indie film that you're going to post on YouTube or something. But writing, you really only need to have access to, I mean, you don't even need access to the internet at this point. You could handwrite something. So, yeah,
right.
I think it still comes from like a good desire to create things sometimes, or like in your example, it can, maybe it's just, you just want the fame and money from creating something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is, it always, it's always a little weird to me when someone's like, I'm writing a book, but I don't really read books. Like,
yeah. And it makes me wonder, like, have they just not found the right genre for them to enjoy, or like the right author? I think that's like, that's one thing when someone says, oh, I just don't really like reading. It's one, I'm like, I don't really trust you. But two, no, I'm kidding. Because, you know, Ross isn't like a huge reader either, but he's a visual guy. Like, he loves movies and film and things. Like, so I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Like, you're more of that. And so that's what you do and you absorb.
Right.
So, but to say that, oh, I just like don't like reading what I'm going to write. It's like, okay, well, maybe you just haven't found the right author or the right drama. Maybe you tried fantasy and you just like really hate fantasy, but you really need to be into historical fiction instead. You know, there's like so many options. It just seems to, seems crazy to wholesale wash like a form simply because you haven't found the right one. It's in the same way some people don't like abstract art and some people love it. It's like, you just got to find your niche.
Yeah, totally. Well, I think that's a good segue into our next topic where we talk about what to read. The first piece of advice is to read a lot. So I think naturally the next question with that is, well, how do I know what kind of books I could be reading or I should be reading? And the quote I chose for this one comes from William Faulkner. But again, this is kind of another one that I've seen echoed by several different authors. So actually, Ash, do you want to read this one since I read the first one? I'll let you go ahead and share this.
So the quote is, read, read, read everything. Trash, classics, good and bad, and see how they do it. Just like a carpenter who works as an apprentice and studies the master, read. You'll absorb it, then write. If it is good, you'll find out. If it is not, throw it out the window. And then, yeah, so the follow-up is like, do you... This is another point reinstated by a lot of famous authors that you should read a variety of books. And so what are your thoughts on what aspiring authors should be reading? Sorry, my voice is going.
It's all good. Yeah. I think this is a good one because that this is kind of a question that I had when I was just getting back into writing. Like, I always liked writing as a kid, but as an adult, it kind of took a break from it. And so knowing what kind of books I should be diving into was a bit of a challenge for me. And so I did a lot of exploring, like, one, to figure out what kind of stuff I like to read again. And I think I've definitely discovered that, and it's fantasy. That's sci-fi and fantasy are at the top of my list. But, you know, as I continued to learn more about writing, I came across more advice like this. That was like, you have to read bad books and books you don't enjoy and books outside of your genre and things like that. So I did take that to heart, and, you know, pick up some things that have been like critically panned or very commercially unsuccessful and things like that. It's definitely been a challenge to get through some of those, but I do think this advice is good because it's one thing to read from examples who have done things well and that you enjoy, but I do think there's value in engaging with things that have not been critically or commercially successful or things that you don't like, so that you can then take those lessons into your own writing as well. Be like, especially in like the editing and revision process, I think it'll give you a slightly more critical eye for those things that you don't like, in your own reading. Not saying you have to like have a bookshelf full of books that you hate by any means. But I think just engaging with stuff that you might not typically read, or something that you know, a new book comes out and it gets really bad reviews, maybe still check it out and see why, and, you know, engage with the reviews, see what's going on, like what people didn't like about it. And that it can be a learning experience. So I do think there's a lot in there that's good advice.
Yeah.
I think you, before we get into the follow-up, how do you feel about this advice just in general?
I think in general it's good. I think that's why I started my book club, because I was continuously reading. And to, you know, I think we've mentioned this too before, but like fantasy is a huge genre. I mean, it really encompasses like a wide swath of subgenres and like different avenues you can take. So it's not like, you know, if you're into nonfiction, that also encompasses a lot. If you're into just like romance, that also encompasses a lot. So even within your own preferred genre, there can be a wild variation. So I think on the whole, it's good advice. But yeah, that's why I started book club, because I was like, I'm getting too stuck in my genre and I need to read other genres, which is nice because it's like every month I have to read like one that's not my preferred. Mm. I don't think it's necessary, I guess, as the caveat, to like read the classics consistently or like make sure that you're like not getting enmeshed into one genre. I think it's nice every now and then to throw it in or to kind of expand outside your horizon of normalcy. So yeah, I guess I'm saying it's great. It is good advice, but that shouldn't be like something that you're like, oh my gosh, I haven't read a classic in like a year and a half. I need to in order to be a good writer. I think that the reasoning behind it is like, you're going back to our first question, is like, you just need to learn and like what mm-hmm. works well in this situation. And, you know, you might find inspiration from others. And so, yeah, I think it's generally like solid advice or something that you should, every few books in your genre, just throw in a fun one that's outside of it for posterity's sake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. I think you had the follow-up. So did you want to go ahead and share that too?
Yeah. So, you know, I think I kind of touched on it, but my follow-up was like, what happens if you just like really hate a genre? But you're like trying to find that advice, or if you're a genre reader and reading something outside of a genre, it slows you down or maybe like holds you back from the drive to read. Cause that's like mm-hmm. something I struggle with sometimes if I'm reading a book outside my genre and I really don't like it. I'm not afraid to DNF, but that usually like puts me off reading for a while. Like it's kind of like, ugh, it was such a slog to get through. And like, I don't want to do that again with a new book or whatever. So I didn't know if you felt like that kind of potential worry as well after.
No. Yeah, definitely. If I switch from like reading something that I really enjoyed to a book that is just not doing it for me, or it's mm-hmm. something that I don't typically enjoy, it definitely does slow down my momentum and like just my overall enjoyment of reading and drive to keep doing it. One thing I try to do is if there's something I know that I'm not going to enjoy as much, or that I'm kind of intentionally reading knowing it's not for me, but I'm still trying to learn from it, is I kind of try to separate it from like my regular reading, in that it like this is work. This is learning. This is, you know, I'm trying to look at this with a more critical eye and understand what I can take from this into my own writing, whether that's anything good or things not to do. And then another thing that helps is, I don't think, like, if you're reading a book that you're not enjoying, or to see what's not working and things like that, I don't think you need to read all the way through. I think you just need to get a good sense of why it's not, you know, why it's not working, why you don't like it, things like that. Because there's been plenty of books that I've picked up for this purpose that I got maybe like a third of the way into, and I was at a point where I'm like, I can see why this isn't working. I can see why it's, you know, not received well critically.
Sure.
I don't necessarily think I need to see how it ends, because it's kind of doing the same thing. I don't think it would hurt to keep reading it, but I feel like the potential like damage to my momentum of reading is, I make that trade-off where it's like, I think I've learned enough from this that I can move on to the next thing. So I don't think this advice means you have to force yourself through books that like are really just a slog for you. Maybe a little more so than you would usually, just to, you know, glean a little more insight from it. But I don't think you have to make it through all the way, like every bad book or every classic that you're reading or anything like that. So yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah, no, totally. I think I fully agree. I'm such a proponent of DNFing books. I'm like, there's no need, if you really don't like it, to keep reading, especially if you've given it the good old college try.
Yeah.
But I think, like, you, as you were saying, you know, if you can get the gist, if you understand it enough to an extent, then, yeah, you can, like, Wikipedia it, or there's an oldie, you can SparkNotes it, you know, and... if you're really interested in how it ends, but it's just, like, not for you. But, yeah, I think that can be hard because, like, a lot for a lot of people, like, the classics, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like, it can be hard, especially if it's, like, a Bronte. Love them. But, man, sometimes it's, like, I don't know if I can do, like, 400 chapters of depression. So it just depends on you know, on your style, I guess. But, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Riverside was being weird for me for a second. No, totally agree. I think the gist of that advice is you still have to engage with those things. Maybe not fully, but
sure.
Yeah. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. Long word.
That's okay. That, so. No. It's fine. It's totally okay.
All right. So this third one, I thought you might appreciate, because I know you said you do research heavily in your work, right? So this next piece of advice is involving research, which I think a lot of writers are familiar with having to do. So I'll go ahead and read this one. This quote comes from Robert McKee. I'm sure, I like the other ones, it can be attributed to many other authors. And actually, I do have a follow-up quote for it as well from Dan Brown. So the first one is, do research, feed your talent. Research not only wins the war on cliche, it's the key to victory over fear and its cousin depression. And then the follow-up quote is, Google is not a synonym for research. So I thought you would appreciate that one, because I know
I do like that one a lot. And once I saw it, I chuckled for sure.
So I don't think I need to make any assumptions about the importance of research to you. So, but how does that play into your writing, and what are your thoughts on, you know, how far a writer should go when it comes to researching different topics?
Yeah, I think, as you said, I do it for a living, but also, you know, I spent 6 years in higher education getting my degrees. So it just eventually became second nature to me. And I think, at least for me, there's like a two-pronged approach, right? It's like, if you're writing something that is so far beyond your own understanding, such as like anything medieval, right? Or, you know, the guy who wrote Martian, I'm sure had to research a bunch of scientific stuff to see if it was possible. If it's within your genre, but you're just not sure, I think it requires a lot. I think, or at least it's a requirement to research. And Dan Brown is right. Research is not just a simple Google search, right? It's, and not to say that Google isn't helpful getting you to your end result. But I think at least the most successful and most realistic, at least fantasy that I've read, has always felt grounded in reality, even if there's a magic system. So in terms of if there's a war, right, like how does a battle function, right? Who goes in first? Different maneuvers. Historically, what did, you know, kings and generals command their armies to do in certain situations? Anyway, you can tell when an author has really taken the time to research and imbue their story with as much realism as possible. And I think that makes a big, big difference. I just finished Bury Our Bones in the Midnight Soil, and it was, most of it was character driven, but there are places throughout history that these like vampires go to, from like Spain to England to all these other places. And it was very obvious that V.E. Schwab had done her research and had like visited these places. It felt real. It felt like you were walking through these cities, even though it was, you know, hundreds of years in the past. So I think it is necessary if you're writing in that genre. For sci-fi, maybe not so much, but that's the second prong approach, is that you should be researching people in your genre and then, you know, figuring out their tactics, reading their advice. If you're not going to read their books themselves, like, you know, Brandon Sanderson's a great example, even though he's not, I mean, he's written some sci-fi, but you know, of like putting all of his lectures online. It's, I think research and learning go hand in hand, and, you know, you don't need to be like thesis noting everything, you know, collecting all these things. But I don't know. I personally will spend a lot of time. I've found a few resources of like people going through like sword moves. Like there are specific sword moves for specific things like backhand or whatever. So that way when like I'm writing about my characters fighting, I have zero personal experience with swords. But I hope that with the research, the hours of research that I'm doing, it's clear. So yeah, I think can't use AI for Google simple search, or like don't just use like the first thing that Google AI gives you. But I find it to be extremely necessary, important, and I think it shows how much you care about your book if you're willing to spend at least a few hours to dive into the nuance. So yeah, that's my long-winded answer
for your question. Totally agree. I knew this would be like your question. That's why I wanted to get your thoughts first. You're definitely much more well-versed in that than I am. I do try to do my research very well, as you know, as much as I know how to. I think this advice is good. You know, it's important to know not just what to research, but how and what sources to look for, and you know, what information is, you know, more reliable than others. And I think, like you said, especially if you're writing something that's outside of your own base of knowledge, it's important to, you know, learn as much as you can on that, so you can make it feel authentic and not kind of break that sense of immersion for the reader. And it also speaks to your passion for your story when readers can see that you put that effort in. There's a very funny example that I think of when I'm doing research that reminds me to verify the information, and that is, I don't know if you've heard this story, I forget the author's name, but he's leaned into it as a joke since then because it was just so like ridiculous. But he was researching ingredients for this alchemical concoction. I don't really remember all the details, but the answer he found on Google was from like Legend of Zelda or some other RPG. And so that's what made it into the book. And people read the book and they were like, this isn't a real thing. And it's,
that's hilarious.
Yeah. And so I think he's leaned into the joke. Like he was very much, like, oh, yep, that's my bad after the fact. But it was just funny scenario that reminds you, you know, double check your sources and where the information is coming from and what it's applying to, because it might not be, especially if you're taking that AI summary at the top of Google, like we said, it might not be what you're looking for.
That's funny. I think another author, I'm blanking on his name right now. I think he's the author of Fight Club. This might've been like anecdotal or it might've actually happened. Can't remember, but there was like in order to figure out how to make like a pipe bomb, he had to like research. And the only way to find that info is like through this like crazy, like restricted source or something, like a book that is banned or whatever. And there was like, it triggered like, I don't even know if this is real or not, but like, you know, if you're trying to like figure out how to make a bomb, it's like,
that would
maybe you're on the FBI watch list some going flags. Forward. But but I think that was like my follow-up question to yours was, you know, what happens when you hit a wall with research or the topic is so niche that it requires, or maybe requires, but not requires, but it requires more effort. Because I personally, even if I know how to research, which I do, sometimes the answer that I'm looking for is just not available. So has there ever been a line for you where you've been like, oh crap, the internet is not really doing it for me, and you've like had to be like, oh, there's like one book out there that can give me the answer, do I need to request it from the library?
So I don't think I've found anything that niche yet, thankfully. But keyword there. That is an interesting question though, because if it's something, I feel like if you're down the rabbit hole that far, that it's clearly important to your story to the point where you didn't want to say, I can just make it up, it's a fantasy setting. Cause there are certain things with that, like, I feel like you can get away with, where it's okay, this answer is hard to find, I'm going to make up some fantastical excuse for why it works this way in this world. Varying degrees of success. There's some flexibility. Yeah. Thankfully I haven't run into this problem, but I feel like if I was that far down the research hole, I would persevere and hunt down that one resource. That is kind of intimidating to think about, though.
Yeah, I think it is interesting, because there's been a couple moments where I'm like, I'm just really not finding the answer. And so I'm like, you know what, I'm just gonna, like you said, kind of just like evolve what I know and like make it try and fit. But I think people, if there is ever a point in which you've hit a wall, I was trying to like figure out the different variations of like a keep. Right? Mm. Not variations, but like the blueprints of a keep.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't quite like the word. I could not find the word. So I just kind of like, you know, use words to describe what I think is like this thing. And it sucked, because I was like, there's like, there has to be a word. And I didn't do what I'm about to advise people. But there's also, especially let's just stick with fantasy. If you're really into fantasy and you're trying to figure out something like medieval in reference and you just really cannot find the answer, no joke, I remember my professors being like, I love when people, like random people, will email me and ask me questions about my subject because they're like working on a book or something like that. Mm-hmm. So truly, even like your local university or like a big university close by, they've got all their professors' emails on there. So if there's like a strange niche question you have, reach out to them. Worst thing that could happen is they're like, they just never respond, or they're like, please don't bother me about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think people forget that you can like ask questions to people who are experts and hopefully maybe get an answer back. But I think it can be intimidating, and, you know, depending on who you are, it can get to a point where you're like, okay, this is fine. But genuinely, best place to start, Wikipedia, not joking. Go down to the bottom, get the footnotes, and then you can like keep diving in and diving in. So it depends. Yeah.
And that sounds fun, like hunting down the experts.
Yeah.
And
it's something
very fantastical about that. Like looking for the ancient wizard with the knowledge. And
yes, exactly. It's your own little adventure, and it's very rewarding. Mm-hmm. And you know, the fear is like, maybe this doesn't make it into the book, and it's like, okay, but you have that knowledge now. And in the future, if it comes up, you don't have to worry about it because you know about it. And you know, maybe I should get on Fiverr and be like, I'm offering research services for a book.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you have any questions, I'll help track down the information. But yeah.
Did you have a follow up for? Oh wait, we just did the follow up for that one, I believe, didn't we?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Do you want to do question number 4, and then we can save the rest for another time?
Yeah, because I think that's about halfway through, so we'll have enough for another mini episode on this. There's so much writing advice out there; we could probably make several. So that's awesome.
Sounds
good to know that we have.
Yeah, there really is
content. So this fourth one is a little more of a, I guess, a controversial quote or a humorous quote, if you will. This one comes from Terry Pratchett, and I'll just read the quote. I can't really do it justice. There's no such thing as writer's block. That was invented by people in California who couldn't write. And that is the quote. So I think the gist of this quote and like the advice that I was trying to touch on with this is that when you are trying to write professionally, you're trying to finish a novel, you know, trying to make a career out of writing, you have to learn to work around writer's block and write even when inspiration isn't striking or it's hard. And I think this is something a lot of new authors, including myself, struggle with. And so I just wanted to get your thoughts on this. Like, what do you think about that quote? like that writer's block doesn't exist, but also hypothetically speaking, saying that your answer is it does exist. How do you motivate yourself to work around it or write when you don't have, you know, that spark all the time?
Well, first of all, RIP to Terry Pratchett. What a legend. First of all, I don't know if I can take writer's block advice from Terry Pratchett, considering he wrote like a 48 book like series, not including like a dozen other like standalone books or whatever. So maybe that's I think that man was just a machine. Yeah, I do. So I think maybe I'm in the middle on this one. I think throughout history, I mean, artists have always experienced a type of mental block, whether it's self-induced or something happens, or I don't think creativity is an ever-flowing river or it's like a never-ending well, right?
Agreed.
I think it's a, there are so many factors that can drive into creativity. What I think Terry Pratchett is, was trying to say here is kind of what you said. It's just like learning to work around it. If you are experiencing writer's block and all you can do is like a sentence a day, better than nothing, but that's when you shift to maybe learning, right? Mm-hmm. Like listening to podcasts, listen to our podcast, or listening to lectures or reading. You know, I think there are ways to tap into that creativity and keep the momentum, even if it doesn't equate to words on a page. So that's kind of where I stand. I do think writer's block exists. I think, yeah, the outcome is really what matters, is are you going to let that, you know, kind of deter you? I experienced that last year. I had a really, I had like a month's long, like, what am I doing? I can't, you know, but there were so many other factors involved with that. So, you know, it's like, I think he's right. I think some people use it as an excuse to like not work on something, or they just get tired of it and whatever. And I think that's the subtle difference.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think, one, I don't think that that quote was really meant to be taken at face value. Like
Well, he's also a satirist. And
right,
like,
yeah, so.
You know, he's funny, so. Yeah.
Context matters with that. I don't think that's, he was quite literally saying that, but I think the message was what you and I just said, is that you have to work around it. Like, that can't be the reason that you don't write for the day, or that you don't, you know, do something productive in your writing career. Like, there are many different ways you can, you know, tap into that creativity and still make some sort of meaningful progress. Like you said, whether it's studying something else, reading something else, or, you know, something that I'll often try to do is, okay, maybe writing like the actual prose isn't working today, but what about outlining or like the world building stuff? Can I do any of that today? Cause that for me, that works different mental muscles.
Yes. Exactly.
And so sometimes I'm up for one, but maybe not the other. But I do think, especially if your goal is to be, I mean, whether you're doing self-publishing or traditional publishing, you're going to have either self-imposed or publisher-imposed deadlines and expectations, just like any career. And so you're going to have that ability to write, unless, you know, you're one of those lucky people who gets inspired every single day.
Yeah, they exist, and I'm envious of them for sure.
Same. But yeah, I think just being able to work past it and write even when it's hard, and remind yourself that it doesn't always have to be perfect on your first go around. Like, it's, it's okay to have a messy first draft, as many popular authors are fond of telling us over and over again. And I swear I will take it to heart one day.
Day, not today. One day, not today. I'm sure once we have published our first books, we can be in that camp and be like, guys, it's just not gonna be good, but right now I hate it. And everything has to be perfect, so but no, I think it's like cross training, right? An athlete is not just a heavy lifter. A competitive lifter is not gonna be lifting weights all day every day, right? Like, there's a rest day there, you know, you need to cross train to be an athlete of any kind. So, you know, if you think about writing in that regard too, in terms of like brain power, it's like, yeah, some weeks are going to go by and the well is almost dry. So what do you do to, you know, like kick that back into gear? And it doesn't have to be writing in particular. So,
And with that note, I found that applying kind of the same line of thinking to other areas of my life has helped me apply it to writing as well. So like, there's a lot of times, I mean, I try to work out like 5 days a week. There's a lot of days I wake up and I don't want to,
Yeah.
But kind of making myself get up and do it, knowing that if I don't do it, it's not going to get done and I'm not going to get the results I want. Just, I feel like working that mindset into other areas of your life can help as well. And then, I mean, I'm sure you guys probably do it at your day jobs. Like, how many times do you just not want to go to work, but you have to go to work? I think it's just an exercise in willpower and, you know, getting through the hard times.
I'm really bad at that. I'm really bad at pushing myself. I think, you know, there's really just like really no excuse. I'm just bad at it.
Everyone's bad at it at some point. But
this year my word was consistency. And thus far this year, I've been very good about like doing more physical fitness stuff and like reading more. I've read more books this year so far, a little over halfway through the year, than I did all of last year.
Yeah.
You know, writing, I've been more consistent, like working through the draft, and that's been fun. So yeah, it's as always, we will tell you to, you know, go easy on yourself, but push yourself, because I'm trying to learn how to do the same. And it's hard sometimes, especially if you have a very busy life. It's not easy.
Yeah, there's a difficult balance to find there for everybody. And it's always individual, I think, where it's make sure you're not pushing yourself too much, but also not letting yourself get away with being too lax either.
Yeah,
both can be equally difficult, I feel like.
Agreed.
Well, those were some fun writing advice topics, Ash. I'm also pretty excited to talk about some of the other ones in a future episode as well, because there's some good ones in there. But I think it was nice to – I don't think we've ever done a writing advice-focused episode like this. So it was nice to touch on some of the more common reoccurring ones there.
Yeah, no, I think this is great. I'm excited for if we choose to do the second half of these questions for the next mini episode. I think it's good. And even if you don't follow our advice, these are some good general advice lines from some of the best in the biz. So hopefully folks can take something from this episode.
Well, I think that's going to do it for our mini episode. But do you have any closing thoughts for anyone? It looks like we have a few people lurking on YouTube. Feel free to say something if you're over there. If you have any questions, topic suggestions, if you just joined at the end and you have no idea what we talked about, that's totally fine. This this stream should stay up for a few hours, and then I'll put the edited recording up on Friday. That's usually when I try to get the episodes up for you guys on podcast platforms and YouTube, so look out for those. But I don't think
I have anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, it looks like Cricket's in the chat right now too. So
everyone's shy, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's all good. We usually get a lot. Our engagement is mostly on the clips, I feel like. So
Okay, cool.
So and this is our first live over on YouTube. So I gotta increase the awareness of it as well.
Yeah. Do we have like a? I only watch YouTube. I don't really. You handle the back end of the YouTube stuff. Yeah. Is there like a? Like, can we post on our YouTube channel, like, when we're going live?
Yeah, so I did earlier today.
Okay, cool.
You can do, like, a text post, kind of like a tweet, I guess.
Nice.
I don't know if I don't know where they see that. Like, I think they have to come to our channel to see it. So I'll experiment with different ways to, like, make it clear to people when we're going live and see what we can come up with. But, yeah.
Exciting stuff.
Thanks again, Ash, for another great writing conversation. And thanks, everyone who stopped by, even if you were quiet. and we'll see you guys all in the next episode.
See you next time. All right, bye, guys.
Take care.